This is Taking Care in Business, a podcast that dives into the topic of corporate social responsibility from many different perspectives. Host Vicki Bolson is the founder and CEO of Bolson Group, a unified marketing company located in Indianapolis. Bolson Group is the first B Corp certified company in Indiana, but Vicki understands that you don't have to be certified in corporate social responsibility in order to use business as a force for good. Join Vicki as she talks about why it's always worthwhile to take care in business.
Sawyer, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. I am going to probably just hop right into things because we have so much to unpack today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And I want to tell the listeners that although we're going to be talking to two local Indianapolis people, that I really do think a lot can be gleaned today from the topic because we're going to be talking about arts and cultural organizations. And we know that all those people that are in the arts that have, you know, they've gone through some heavy, stuff, I better not say that word, during the pandemic. and just to give you an idea of the impact, I pulled some data from the Americans for the Arts. And the arts and cultural sector was, now just think about this, people. The arts and cultural sector was a $919.7 billion industry that supported 5.2 million jobs and represented 4.3% of the nation's economy in 2019. As of June 2021, the percentage of job losses at nonprofit arts organizations remains nearly four times worse than the average of nonprofits, and that's 21%. Versus 5%. That's quite a bit. And I have more data that I'll sort of pepper in during our conversation, but I'm just excited because today we have Julie Goodman, and she is the president and CEO of the Arts Council of Indianapolis. And since its inception, the Arts Council has provided programs and services to the citizens of Central Indiana and to hundreds of artists and arts organizations. It's helped promote the cultural life of Indianapolis, continues to expand and sustain the arts economy, and bolster the cultural vitality and positive image of Indianapolis. And one such organization is The Spirit in Place, whose mission is to be a catalyst for civic engagement through creative collaborations among the arts, humanities, and religion. And from this organization today, we have its director, Pam Blevins-Hinkle. So welcome, you two.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Kind of set us up with a zinger there, didn't I? With the impact. Yeah. Woo! I mean, it's crazy. And before we started recording, I mean, I said that it's unbelievable how the impact on the arts organization has affected others. You know, you think about the parking attendants and the business, the restaurants and the hotels, and it just goes and it goes on and on and on. And I can't imagine. I mean, you have your hands full with your jobs before a pandemic and especially in the arts, you know, fighting for the arts. And so it's just, it's crazy. And my company had an arts and events and entertainment division. So we were extremely impacted last year by what happened. And I think it was definitely a part of why we were, you know, so down over the year in review as well. But I want to get into this. So Julie, I did a little sleuthing on you because I cannot believe we haven't like met face to face and had been BFFs, but I looked and I see that you were a Theta. I was a Theta.
Oh yeah.
I am a Theta.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. If we were together, we could do the handshake. so I love that. And I also just your path that you have taken to get where you are today, PR and marketing, and it looks like an interest in the arts. That was really my path too. So I definitely think we should get together and
I would love that. I absolutely agree. And the through line, I think, is this commitment to corporate social responsibility, right? And what that looks like. And I've seen that from the corporate side and the nonprofit side and arts side. So thank you for what you're doing and for hosting these conversations.
Yeah. So I there's so much to talk about, but before we do, I want to ask you, can you just tell us a little bit about your path and what led you to this job? What got you there? And maybe you're a little bit regretful, but let's just...
Oh, no, I'm not regretful at all. Even with the last 16 months, it's been an absolute honor, really, to be in this work in this moment with this community. So as hard as it is, I am grateful for that. Very briefly, I mean, my path comes from arts education. I mean, I think I from my earliest memories, music and arts and theater were all a part of my life because of the influence of my family. I come from a family of musicians and creatives and teachers. And so that intersection of arts and education it defined my childhood experience, and that just carried through. So I was a music major in college, a double major in voice and piano. And then I had a English professor actually who really inspired me. And I discovered journalism and this whole world of marketing and communications, and ultimately found this intersection of interests and realized, you know, my ability to use some of those skills and advocacy skills in service of my love for the arts. But maybe I was better as a music minor. So I kept that as a minor. And then really that's been the defining characteristic of my career. So I did a chapter in consulting, largely in service to nonprofit organizations and community development organizations in Cincinnati. So I worked with a lot of organizations that were working on the development of that community. For the first most of my professional career, Indianapolis is my hometown. I grew up here, but I ended up in Cincinnati because of my pathway from college at Miami University. And then I worked for about a decade in the arts with Cincinnati Opera in communications with them. And then I went over into corporate and I worked in actually CSR based role for a large multinational organization focused on vision care and global vision care. So very interesting mix. And all of that came back to a very small nonprofit in Cincinnati that did all of the public art in that community. And then I had an opportunity to come back to Indianapolis with a higher ed organization called Strata Education Network in a marketing communications role. And then I had this giant surprise of an opportunity to consider joining the Arts Council. And it just seemed like this blending of all of those experiences. Yeah. And so it's just been it's not a traditional path, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm grateful for all of those experiences, and I've definitely called upon all of those experiences in the last 16 months.
Yeah, well, when I was looking at your whole list of jobs, I thought, oh my gosh, they all make sense coming together for the position you're in right now. I mean, it's really pretty astounding how perfect it is, the background that you have for your role. And Pam had told me in a phone call a month or so ago, a little bit about what's going on with the two organizations, and just raved about you. And of course, everybody that I've talked to since then, just to get some background, has as well. So hats off to you for the job well done. Pam, I know your background, but for our listeners, you two have got a pretty amazing background that led you to being the director of Spirit in Place. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background?
Sure. I'm originally from Franklin, Indiana, and I'm a Butler grad. I know Sawyer is too. Go Dogs. I was one of the first arts administration graduates out of Butler way back in the way back, with a minor in music as well. I am a classically trained flutist. So my career path has really been working in arts and culture in all those years, in a variety of settings. I lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for almost a decade, where I led an arts organization there in a suburban community. And then my life as a practicing artist. So in addition to being an arts administrator, I'm also a community song leader, and I've been a church musician for a couple, three decades now. Always my life, personally and professionally, was about arts and humanities, and my faith journey, my spiritual walk, which all of those were really important to me. So 16 years ago now, that's hard to believe, when the post opened up with Spirit in Place, that just seemed like the perfect alignment of the things I care about. And also for me as a practicing musician, like performance is a beautiful thing, and I love that, but that's not actually what motivates me about my own art making. It's about how the arts are these incredible tools, right, for healing, for self-expression, for connecting communities, for social change, right? And this is what Spirit of Place is all about, of course, is using not just the arts, but using the arts in combination with other disciplines and history and humanities and religion to help communities, right? To bring people together in conversation, to create change and transform their communities and neighborhoods. So Spirit of Place was just like the perfect place for me to land. And wow, it has never been a dull moment since 2006 when I took that post. And during this pandemic time, it's even been more, our work has been more critical since my heart, of course, has gone out to all of our performing arts friends who I've just been terrified for, particularly since not only does their income rely on performing, but then they tend to work in the other industries, right, for supplemental income, yeah, right? Hospitality, yeah, and restaurants and things. So, but the opportunity, if there's an opportunity on this for us to like then really use our arts world and humanities world to help people navigate this time. So the work of Spirit in Place becomes even more important then. And one of the things that with the killing of George Floyd in the midst of all this, has been, increased conversations around race. So, we were already in that arena. So that's one of the things that Spirit in Place has been doing. But also we had been working actually for 4 years, trying to create an opportunity for our community to come together and really talk about arts-based community development, right? And how we, that is it's a discipline. There's a methodology, there are tools, there are experts. And Indianapolis has people who do that, but we want to do that more. And so it just so happens that during this time, we were able to get funding, and we have this fantastic partnership of organizations that includes the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and it includes the Reclaim Project and Community Art, Community Action of Greater Indianapolis, and the Indianapolis Neighborhood Resource Center, who have all like pooled our funds so that we can get some folks together and up our game on this kind of work at this particular time. It's just so important. So we're really excited about that. And I have to insert here too, although you already said it, like Julie Goodman is a rock star. So this has been a very challenging time, and she has had such grace and leadership and vulnerability. And she has just modeled so many wonderful things. I can't even begin to express how important it has been to have a leader of her caliber at this particular time. So I want to say that out loud. I know you already said it, but I want to my own mouth to honor this incredible woman who has really unified and challenged and celebrated and helped so much of us personally as an arts leader in the community, and also our artists and our arts organizations. Her leadership's just been fantastic. You rock, Julie. We love you.
Well, that's before we talk about her being the leader of the band, the rock star that she is, I want to go back a little bit, talk about the history of the Arts Council, because I grew up in Indiana, and after college, I moved to one of the most thriving arts communities in the world, New York City. But then when I came back, I noticed, and so this, just for the sense of timing, this was 80s, moved back in the 90s. And when I came back, you know, I started working for, I worked PR firms that did events and entertainment in television, but I really noticed a shift in sort of the supporting of the arts in Indianapolis. And I did some research, because when I was thinking about this for this interview, I thought, why, you know, what was really going on? And I think that the Arts Council was started in the 80s, right? And it was one of the last big cities to have a council, correct?
Yes, there were iterations before that, but they had kind of been on and off. And in 1987, the mayor's office, it was Mayor Hudnut at the time, had it initiated this idea of an arts council. And we were actually created to help support the administration of public funding into the arts and cultural community specific to the Pan Am Games. So I think our origin story in Indianapolis very much links arts and sports and this relationship that exists in really interesting ways. And we've just seen that, you know, over and over again since that time. But yeah, some cities have arts and culture, like an office of arts and culture within city government. In this case, the decision was made to create the Arts Council as an arm's length agency. So we're an independent 501c3, but the belief was that that gives some stability as administrations change. And as so that was an important part of our origin story. So we've come from that, and we continue to administer that program for the city to this day, but have added many more services since then, fortunately.
Yeah, I thought it was important so that those listening outside of Indiana can sort of understand, you know, the context of what we're going to talk about.
Yep.
So you've kind of explained what the role of the Arts Council is. What, this is a really open-ended question that you could probably, this could be a whole series of a podcast. But okay, so you got a big enough job as it is pre-pandemic, right? You know, you're just
advocating for arts in America is a thing, right? Yeah.
You know, I mean, advocating for it, creating opportunities for education and growth and development and all that. And then boom. So challenges beyond belief. What can you sort of sum up, like what you've had to deal with and what you have learned from this whole situation? And then I want to ask Pam specifically the kind of support that she received from your organization and how that sort of relationship worked.
Oh my goodness. Well, so
I know, very open.
We're an intermediary organization, right? We're an advocacy and services agency, just like the proxy for us is a chamber of commerce, right? So we exist to be in service to the community, to arts and cultural organizations and individual artists. Not all arts councils support both, but we do. And we are grateful that we are able to. I'll never forget the date. It was March 13th. It was a Friday, the 13th. And we were coming off of a couple of days of, I think we had been monitoring the international news and then the national news and then the local news and understanding what was happening and how fast it was happening. And it was really within a matter of 3 or 4 days that it went from, because I had been sitting in a theater the Saturday night before, and there was tension because it was out there, but here we were still together in a theater, in a live performance the Saturday before the shutdown. And that Friday the 13th was the first time we hosted a call of arts leaders in the city. And there were, I don't know, over 100 leaders on that call that Friday. And we didn't have many answers at that time. We had a lot of questions, and we just created space to open the conversation, to create a forum for support. And it became clear in that conversation the magnitude of what was happening. So we started with impact research from that very first call. And between that Friday, the 13th, and Monday, we had, I think, over 1,000 survey responses from individual artists and over 100 responses from our organizational partners, which is basically all of the nonprofit organizations in our community, projecting what the impact was of these closures. And so sitting in March, we thought, this is a couple of weeks, this is a couple of months. So at that point, we were projecting 3,000 closures and cancellations in March. Mm-hmm. Of course, we learned very quickly that this was going to extend. And so the next impact assessment that we did in just a few weeks after that, we learned that there were going to be, it was 30,000 closures and cancellations, and that we were in a complete shutdown. We were dealing with furloughs and layoffs across all of our organizations, and that 100% of our individual artists were essentially in a, like their income just evaporated. And as Pam noted, and you noted, it wasn't just their income from their creative practice. It was all of the related income that many of who work in the creative economy depend on to support themselves and supplement that income. So it was really devastating. I think the experience that I had in crisis communications was helpful, I think, because it really became about listening, the cycle of listening and understanding where we were, understanding the facts of the moment, and creating space for sharing key learnings, sharing resources, bringing resources together, making connections, and in an ocean of uncertainty, to have a home base. Even where we could admit to each other, we didn't know. We didn't know what was next. We didn't know what the right next thing was, but there was a commitment to figure it out together and to create a safe space to acknowledge all of that uncertainty and all the scenario planning. And I think that we had so much, really, as hard as it was, there was so much incredibly thoughtful, smart strategy happening, that bringing that together gave some measure of comfort and confidence in a time when that was just non-existent. You know, the emotional roller coaster, and we're feeling it again now. There's a bit of Groundhog Day happening right now with what's happening. So, but I think what I learned is that the importance of connection and creating that safe space, and just to not underestimate the importance of that, and doing that for our arts leaders and doing that for artists. We created forums for artists as well. And I think if there's a legacy to any of this, it's, you know, I think before we had all been so busy in our own worlds, in our own silos, advancing our own missions, raising funds, producing the work, it was, we got together, but not often and not at a very deep level.
Yeah.
And I think that's the, if there's, there are many silver linings that have come from this, but that's a really big one, I think, is just appreciating, and this is a theme, of course, in all of this, but that the importance of connection, right? And I mean, the arts are a business of gathering. We are a business. We are about shared experiences at our core. And when that was taken away, to see how quickly, and it happened immediately over that same weekend in March, we started to see artists pivot and go virtual. We started to see organizations pivot and reach out. We started to see organizations change their model and makers start to sew masks and gowns. We saw our youth serving organizations start to make art kits and go out into neighborhoods and create capacity for continued expression and support. And so this kind of relentless drive that creatives have to continue their practice, continue serving, continue connecting us, continue inspiring, even as their own circumstance was in a free fall.
Yeah.
Was incredible. And we were trying to figure out a way to kind of express that. And it ended up with this kind of phrase, indie keeps creating. And that really became a mantra for us through this whole thing. And I think it kind of anchored, it honored the spirit of what we saw happening in our community, and it anchored us in that truth. Mm-hmm. So those are just a few
reflections
about at least those early stages and what has been a through line, I think, over the last 16 months.
Yeah, I mean, I saw and felt everything you just described. It was pretty amazing. And PAM, Spirit in Place, was one of those organizations that had to shift. They had a festival just, you know, around the corner. So talk about the experience that you went through as the director of an organization with an event coming up that was really with its theme to uplift and have these dialogues. Like how did that all affect you and affect the community?
Yeah, it was extraordinary. We do a festival every fall. It's 10 days long with, you know, 35 events or so. And so, just like everybody else, we all learned about it. Use Zoom, didn't we? if we didn't know already, but then going deeper with that is like, how do we use this technology and other tools to create that connection? So how do we create shared experience, right? And we all had to up our game really fast. And at Spirit in Place, our program director, Erin Kelly, who runs the festival, she had to like become the expert on this so she could help our festival partner organizations who are leading these events, so we could help them learn how to create the best experience possible for folks. And of course, Spirit in Place is also located within the School of Liberal Arts at IUPUI. So we had the added layer of we're part of a large institutional structure that had its own rules too. So, I'm thinking back to what Julie was saying about how the Arts Council created some level of comfort. That phrase does not do justice to what they created for us. Those weekly calls, I remember when this happened too. And really, when you lead an arts organization, it's kind of a lonely job sometimes, right? You feel isolated. And so to get into a space where we can all look at each other and go, ah! What's going on? Even when there are no answers, the power of those weekly gatherings for me, I mean, I hung on them, right? I mean, I looked forward to them. I could see faces that were having the same struggles. There was space to bring concerns in. And also the Arts Council just did a fabulous job of, you know, their team gathered all the information within the arts of all, how all the disciplines were handling things. How were theaters handling things? What's dance doing? What's happening in the visual museum world? And so it was just so fantastic. Every week we'd have an update because it was just overwhelming. Here we are trying to just manage our institution through this without the time or the brain bandwidth to be on, be paying attention to all these arenas and what's changing daily. And so that resource gave such comfort because I knew I could go into those meetings. And then the other thing I think is really, that really has struck me in the months past is that we were meeting weekly, we were talking, there was this beautiful space so that when the global uprising around race occurred, we had relationship with one another. We had a space, a powerful space, which was used as a listening presence, as a listening framework. And so I think in many ways, that framework that had been created was so valuable to the equity work that many institutions were already engaged in, but also helping to move others into that arena to do more work. So I think that that I've reflected many times on how powerful it was that we had this framework that the Arts Council had created, where we could share and where people could be heard. And the Arts Council did a great job of not just doing surveys and all the technical things they do, but of creating a listening space. And again, in a time when we're all alone and our listening tools are not in person, I just think that's so important. And for Spirit and Place, you know, our festival went off great. We had fewer events than usual because some organizations just were not ready to dive in to what it would mean to try to do a virtual event. But it did. And the great, you know, one of our great learnings was the accessibility of Zoom. So we have our global audience watching our programs, which we'd never had before. So we had something crazy, like a 700% increase, right, in the number of people participating in our programs from outside of Central Indiana. So that is fantastic. And so we want to keep that, right? Yeah, absolutely. And so, and then also for our audiences that are older, the festival's in November, not always the best weather. So for our audiences that are older, they're like, this is great. Right? I can participate. And if the weather's icky, I can just do this. So as we move forward out of this, this is one of the lessons we're taking, which is like, oh, gee, maybe we need to do a both and, where live events are also streamed and they're accessible to folks who can't make it for whatever reason, right? And so, and honestly, it's kind of embarrassing that it's taken a pandemic for us to like be committed to accessibility at that level, but it's a fact, right? So so we're committed and we're looking at that. What are the investments we need to make? What are the resources we need? How do we make that happen? Because that's also part of our equity commitment, right? So it's continues to be an unfolding journey. We are now planning the next festival, and actually in our festival applications, we're like, you know, we don't know what's happening in the world yet. So think about your event in terms of, can we do it virtually if that's what happens? So so the good news is I'm confident in saying now we will have a festival no matter what happens. You know, we don't know how, you know, exactly yet how that's all going to pan out with this new Delta variant stuff. But and as an artist, I also want to say, like, it's been so challenging, right? And singing is my personal art form. So we've been singing on Zoom. Not ideal. Try to do a choir on Zoom. It's challenging, but it's also
so cool when it comes together.
Well, it is, but it's a lot of work. And so artists have had to up their technical game too, right? Learning to use tools that help us deliver our form in these, you know, in this way. And so that's been true for me, certainly, although I still do have a looping machine sitting under my desk that I'm too terrified to learn to use. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I will. So it's been a challenging time. And it's been a challenging time to find resources, to keep our institutions going. Spirit and Place has in many ways been fortunate in this because most of our income is from grants. not earned revenue or ticket revenue. So, you know, this has been a particular challenge. I'm sure Julie could speak to that, but the Arts Council and the State Arts Commission, you know, the various recovery funds and all the, you know, all the things to help these organizations keep their doors open. But we're still at risk as a sector. And who will survive this as a sector? What organizations will be able to survive it? Because it really is for, especially for the small groups, you know, hand to mouth. And some of them are like, will we be here at the end of the year? And so we're not out of the woods yet.
Well, I, you know, you both have obviously taken care in business, right? So we've got the supporting arts organization, which is like other organizations, although you kind of talked about it, Julie, at the beginning, that they're a little different in every city, but they exist. And then Pam, you are reflective of an individual artist as well as an arts organization that are in every city. I think the best thing you can do is learn from the chaos, right? Like, get better, be adaptable. And obviously you have both provided the your mission and then some to all of your stakeholders. And now what I think is really super cool is that the two of you are coming together to offer something to the community. So I want you to talk about that a little bit. And you, whichever one wants to talk about it, you can play off each other to explain what's going on.
Pam, you want to get us started? Yeah.
Sure, I'll get us started. Spirit, I talked a little bit before about what we call arts-based community development. And actually, a lot of people like, what's that? So the way the Americans for the Arts defines that is art-centered activity that contributes to the sustained advancement of human dignity, health, and or productivity within the community. So it's really about arts beyond beautification and entertainment, right? Because that's often the lens that we think about art, right? It makes a place pretty or it gives us something to watch. But this is about how we use the arts for transforming communities, right? And that can mean so many things. It could mean the intersection of art with the environment. It could mean art and social justice. It could be urban design. It could be creative placemaking. It could be prison arts or arts and youth or arts and aging. And so these are multiple arenas where artists can function in ways that help enhance the dignity. And I should also say, like, the capacity and infrastructure of communities, because for Spirit and Place, that's really important to us. Is we're using arts, humanities, religion as tools to move the community forward, to increase capacity of individuals, of organizations. And so this is something we are super excited about. Indianapolis has artists, and Julie can talk more about this, who do that work. And so what we're looking to do is bring some people together who are across artistic sectors and disciplines and who work in social service and different environments. So we can really create like a learning cohort here of people who are like committed to the long journey of how do we keep improving the quality of arts infused work in the city. And we are bringing three extraordinary experts to town in September. Wendy Morris, who's with Creative Leadership Studio, Harry Waters, who is a theater artist, and April, I've forgotten April's last name, who is an open space technology expert. And so we're going to have many, many hours of training. And as part of that, although this is like the cohort of people who are part of the training is closed, we do have one session that's open to the public on Saturday, September 18th from 9 a.m. to 1, where the community is going to come together in an open space format, and they're going to build the agenda of parallel conversations that are going to happen. And that kind of open space technology, you know, it helps activate what's already alive in the community. So we're super excited about it, that this kind of training, in recent memory, there hasn't been any, you know, training particularly like this. And in Indianapolis, and I'm going to boot it over to Julie, you know, Indianapolis does, like, we have the most amazing murals, right? Yeah. And so sometimes when we talk about our space community development, people say, oh, murals, we're like, it's actually like a whole lot more than murals. So we're really excited for Indianapolis to more fully explore that dimension. And the Arts Council is engaged in this arena too. And I'll let, you know, I'll toss it over to Julie to talk about what the Arts Council does in this arena.
Well, Pam, I think I'm asked often now, what's next? You know, what's next? What is Indianapolis and what does arts in Indianapolis look like coming out of this? And I think there are two themes. And Pam, I think you're the one that helped give me the language to talk about how we're going to use the disruption of COVID and of this intersecting racial equity movement, you know, to come out of this as a more equitable, more just, more diverse, more accessible arts and cultural community and community as a result. So I think the first legacy of this has to be how we utilize everything we've learned together and move forward together to be more equitable. And so that's a whole other conversation that we can have about the deep work that's happening around that. But it connects to the other theme, which is this whole category of arts and. So what Pam is talking about is the future of arts and culture in Indianapolis, but I think it's relevant everywhere. We are seeing an absolute renaissance of creativity, of expression, of artist-led initiatives, of artist-led development. It's so exciting. It's so necessary. It's so important. And I think it is that the connection of arts and. So we started by talking about our origin story of really beginning with arts and sports, right? And I think we are seeing in every sector, every dimension of our community, the role that artists and arts and creative practice can play. And so I think this, we're so grateful for this training. We're grateful to be partners in this about building capacity. It's about building language. It's about helping build understanding and awareness that this is a practice area, and then how to connect these experts and resources within our community structure. So at the city level, county level, and then within the sectors that we all interact with and have influence in, how to make these resources available. There's an appetite for it. There's a strong interest in this. And the timing couldn't be more important, I think, as we think about the role of artists and arts and culture in helping our cities, our communities, our society move forward from this experience. So thank you, Pam, for your leadership and for including us in this. We're so grateful.
Well, we're also grateful. And just to add to that a little bit, it's you know, it's exciting, not that just that it's artist led, but that it's community informed. Yep. And so that is like such a powerful piece for us about how artists can work with mm-hmm. communities, right? Alongside, not to communities, but with communities, right? Mm-hmm. To create real change. And so that's really the power of this renaissance that Julie is talking about too, which is so exciting. It's a spirit of place. And we're delighted that the Arts Council is partnering with us. And I forgot to mention earlier that Reconnecting Our Waterways is also one of our partners. In the work. And we could not be doing this work without these organizations that I've mentioned, because we've spent 5 years trying to get unsuccessfully getting grant money. And finally, the community partner organizations were like, yes, we're in. We need this in our town. We will make it happen. And so we're just so grateful for their investment and partnership with us.
Well, I am just like sort of overcome right now, because I like everything that you just described. The coming together, Pam giving you the language to, and when you said, I was like writing this down. I just, it's like, okay, if every community could do this, I mean, it is the path forward, right? We've been through so much hurt, so much trauma, so much fear, all these negative emotions. And and, you know, using art as a way in the community to create healing. I'm kind of using my own words here, but is just the direction that we need to go. And it's really the antithesis of a community coming together, you know, and having sort of the same goal and outlook on what, how do we move forward? You know, I mean, I'm making stuff up here because I'm like overcome with emotion and beklempt about the whole thing, but I applaud you two for coming together, putting this together for, I mean, just everything you've done for the arts organizations here. And I've said this on our last podcast when I can't even remember who we were interviewing, but at the start of the conversation, you were talking about how artists, you know, it affected their supplementary income. And Gleaners is a client of ours, and I had gone there to volunteer about a month ago, and they gave us a tour. And as they were giving the updated tour of how they did things through the pandemic, they were talking about how the arts community and the hospitality industry is where they got most of their workers after mm-hmm. the pandemic hit, which, you know, makes total sense when, you know, then all of a sudden their secondary income is down. So I remember at the time feeling like, whoa, that is such a smart way to then for Gleaners to rebuild and get done what they needed to get done, you know. And I think that the Arts Council, that's what you were there for, was to supply that sort of one-stop shop to go to learn like each category, what to do, and just be able to, you know, expel those thoughts and fears and have that supportive system that people like Pam as an individual artist was looking for, but also her organization. So can you tell us the date and the time for the public participation option for your upcoming event so that we can let everybody hear that, but also we can post it again for everyone?
Sure. It's going to be Saturday, September 18, from 9 a.m. to 1. And if folks are interested in that, we don't have any, we don't have the registration link going just yet. But spcomm at iupui.edu, spcomm at iupui.edu. You can send a note there about your interest, and we'll be sure that you get some updates.
By the time this airs, it's probably live, everyone. And if you need a quick link, just DM me or something, and I'll make sure you get it. Any final parting words about anything you definitely want to say? I'm excited for you guys with this event. I hope that other cities come together and consider doing something similar in support of the artists all over our nation. So anything else you'd like to say? I want you to definitely give your organizational contact info as well.
Well, I thank you for this opportunity, for the conversation. And I think I just want to say thank you to your listeners. So much of what we did at the Arts Council was really a mirror, a way to channel the support of the community, the concern of the community for creatives, for artists, for the arts and cultural institutions that we all treasure. And the reason that we are in this moment looking at it at reopening of seasons, the fact that we're even talking about this is because of the generosity of the community, of the engagement, whether people were engaging in virtual content and were continuing with contributions as they were able, if you were tipping artists through Venmo or PayPal, all of those actions made a huge difference. Yes, the financial support was important, but it was also the intention of voicing your support for the role of artists and arts and culture in community. And we saw that in Indianapolis, and we saw that in communities nationwide. And so I think just to leave with an expression of thanks for that and gratitude for that, and to please continue, because as Pam said, we are not out of the woods in this. Organizations have survived by going through their reserves. Most organizations might have 6 months of reserves. We're still in that 6 month mark of sustainability. So just to please engage safely as you're able, what's right for you. And now we have many options with virtual and hybrid and in person. So we all have options to continue to engage in the ways that are right and meaningful for us. And I just encourage you to keep doing that, and thank you for doing that.
Yeah, and I would just piggyback on that. As an artist, and say, please support your artists. If there's somebody you love that makes cool stuff, please send money to their Venmo account or whatever, or buy their CD or whatever. Or even if it's not money, send them a note and say, yeah, I love your, and your song is healing me right now and helping me get through this time. Or this poem that you wrote, I'm reading it in the morning as a meditation to keep me sane during this time. Would you let that poet know? Let that artist know of the difference that they're making, because this is what's getting us all through. And we're on social media and we're looking at all this stuff that our creators are making. And so just tell them, yes. Reach out to the people that are creating for you, that make a difference in your life, and let them know. And then the second part I would want to leave your listeners with is, please stay awake. So this is a time of profound, profound change on multiple levels, how we live, how we work, how we create, how we engage, how we include. All these questions are on the table, and we're actually paying attention to them. So please stay in the space, stay with the river that's flowing with that. Don't let the return to normal. I don't even know what that means anymore.
Yeah.
You don't let that be the dam that stops a lot of powerful change. And so I'm so excited. If there's anything I have enthusiasm for in the midst of all this madness, it's that. It's how we're rethinking and re-engineering, and we're resetting new norms, I hope. But we have to stay with it, right? We have to keep pushing. We can't like, oh, things are starting to go, you know, the virus is teaching us that right now. Right. So we can't sit back in our chairs. So that would be the other piece I would just leave you with, is like, let's not lose the momentum that is keeping the power of change in our systems moving forward. And let's keep art at the center of that change, because we have the possibility, the potential as artists to really help heal, connect, nurture, rebuild our neighborhoods and our communities in super powerful ways.
Wow. What a great way to end this. Well said, perfect advice from both of you. Great aspirational content. So thank you both for spending time and having such a great open conversation with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Vicki.
I just want to thank Sawyer Benj, our producer, and our show sponsors, Selflessly and Charge. If you'd like to nominate someone for Taking Care in Community, you can visit our website, takingcareinbusiness.com, or email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, or download Taking Care in Business wherever you get your podcasts. If you love Taking Care in Business, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review, or share this episode on your social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Taking Care in Biz. That's Taking Care in Biz, B-I-Z. If you have questions or comments, you can also email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks to our sponsors, Selflessly in Charge. And until next time, take care in business.